This episode of AVXL was recorded on February 15th, 2018. We're going to talk TV security, why wiring your speakers backwards is a polarity thing, not a phase thing, Kavo's Uber Remote, MLB TV, and so much more.
Testing, 1, 2, 3. All right. I'm not blowing anything out.
Ignorant weasels chewing on your soul. Ignorant weasels. Do you have speed?
Yeah.
Welcome to AVXL, your guide to the best in home video and audio gear, no matter what your budget is. I'm Patrick Norton.
Excuse me. I'm Robert Herron.
Robert's feeling very comfortable. We're recording because of a move that I cannot discuss, but we are recording right now in the front seat of my truck.
Yeah, man.
Which was really quiet until they started offloading giant pallets full of glass bottles next to us. So if you hear a terrible crashing sound, do not fear for Robert and I.
Hey, at least we're not driving around.
Could be like driving in cars with nerds.
Less multitasking.
Oh,
safer.
My goodness. Hey, well, that's actually, you know what? We'll talk about that later. The driving in cars with comedians is awesome. I don't even like Seinfeld, and I love driving in cars with comedians. We were talking about AVXL, though, where we talked about home theater and audio gear. And, you know, the thing that really blew my mind this week, other than how awkward getting a over-the-air digital antenna, if it's in the middle of your house, like, literally, I'm like, it's been 20 years since I've, like, had my hand on a set of rabbit ears and, like, lifted my arm up and the picture suddenly appeared. But literally the one spot, because everything's in this one closet, I kicked you a message on this, a signal message on this, because I was laughing so hard.
I did find a network tuner for you if you're not using one.
Good. So. I could use probably a faster network tuner, because the network tuner plods a little bit. It's about 3 years old now. But I was laughing because I need to rig the antenna. I either need a roof-mounted antenna or to put the antenna in the attic.
Signaling?
Well, because I was literally sitting there, and if I press it at this angle on this wall, perfect NBC reception. And if I put it anywhere where I can actually hang it without physically holding it up, or maybe I was the actual television boosting.
I would say here in the Bay Area, too, for whatever reason, NBC tends to be one of the more difficult to tune channels when you get the other channels to tune in, because we have multiple directions for where the broadcast towers are located.
Quite diametrically opposed, but almost.
Because really,
one's literally like, you know, one's across the bay in San Francisco. The other one's on a mountain southeast of us.
And then there's a couple coming out of San Jose. So.
Yeah, and we're also funny because our original NBC affiliate basically got deaffiliated years and years and years ago. So like NBC operates broadcasts in this weird way without a local affiliate in the Bay Area. Well, they run San Jose basically up into San Francisco when there used to be a San Francisco NBC affiliate. But once I got it running, watching the kids watching like ice dancing and curling and stuff, I love it. There's another curling junkie in the family.
Oh. So. And as I mentioned last week, I was curious if any of the over-the-top OTT services like Sling TV or PlayStation View give you access to the NBC Sports app, where here in North America, it is handy for just picking and choosing exactly what content you want to watch from the Winter Games. And yes, it turns out that both of those services, it seems most of the OTT services, at least those two, if you have that service, you have access to that app and can stream it on your mobile device.
I'm honestly tempted, because there's so much available on NBC Olympics website or the NBC Sports websites.
I assume it's going to be with Google TV too, or YouTube TV.
I'm almost tempted to subscribe to something for a month just so I can punch my access code in, because, you know, they do a few hours of broadcasting every night, but it's never like you got to record the whole thing and fast forward through it.
That's also ridiculous. Laughing
because my children in, you know, 1 2-hour session of watching the Olympics have seen more television commercials than they have in the previous year. Maybe
there
the previous
are many
two
commercials.
Years.
And
well, we
NBC
watch everything.
Also takes breaks at the worst possible moment sometimes where they're just, oh, you cut right now.
Well, I mean, I cut the cord years ago, maybe a decade ago at this point. So to actually have to sit through commercials is something like my boys have never really experienced unless we're in a hotel or, you know, well, basically if we're in a hotel or at their grandparents' house, my folks' house.
Well, unless you set up your own over-the-air receiver with the appropriate software, then you could strip those commercials. There are, you know what? That'd be a good thing to talk about. I'll put that together for a future episode.
Homework.
But that's one way to do it. And currently, I'm also using my brand new Roku Ultra. And that is working very well, I have to say. I'm just thoroughly pleased with that. It acts as a castable device in addition to just being its own greatness with the has NBC Sports for the Olympic coverage right there. The beauty with that app is that I am just picking and choosing exactly what events to watch. And if I want to rewatch it, no problem. I want to rewind it, no problem. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not at the mercy of primetime coverage for the Olympics, and just fantastic. But your antenna woes remind me to order up that Channel Master Smartenna Plus that we looked at CES.
Right.
With the push of a button. It has 7 configurable patterns within the antenna itself, flat antenna design, and that may be the answer to a lot of folks, for at least those that can use an indoor antenna and receive something. Depending on where you live, sometimes your only option really is to put something up on the roof, or it has to be exposed and large enough to receive signals that are very far away. So,
or we could just take the whole mess, put it in the Airstream, and use the vintage 1977 Airstream UHF antenna that's up there.
It probably works fantastic.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, the Smartenna Plus was the what Channel Master announced at CES 2018.
$90. I think I'm throwing down on that. $80 or $90.
There will be a review in a future episode. Something we saw came out February last year. I want to say it's Code Media. It was like this crazy sort of Uber control system for your home theater. Lauren Good, Walt Mossberg introduced this with the founder of the company, Cavo, C-A-A-V-O.
Oh, we previewed that at CES a couple years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like forever and a day
ago. Hands-on time with that.
Yeah, it was like machine vision, and it's this beautiful box with like copper buttons and a big panel, and it's very, you know, it looks like it's made out of bamboo.
It's an Uber HDMI switch, though.
Yeah, well, it's okay.
You plug everything into this.
You plug everything into it. You can use the remote control, you can talk to it, and you can do things that no other control system could do, like play NBC, and it knows how to switch to the right channel to do that.
It really went a long way towards simplifying use, mm-hmm. and I also appreciated, I believe it offered live previews of all connected ports. Yeah. So visually, you could just look and say, without even reading a label, you could just say, okay, that's definitely the TV, that's definitely the game console, that's definitely mm-hmm. my streaming box. And that visual aspect of it was what really impressed me, in addition to just sweet looking hardware. So
it was originally
and it has arrived.
Yeah, it actually started shipping on Valentine's Day.
Aww.
One of the first reviews came out, Nile Patel over at The Verge, and it's pretty crazy. Like 5,000 units went on sale for $399, and I'm going to quote Nile here. After using a review unit for several days, it's clear that Cavo has the most interesting idea about the future of remote controls anyone's had in years. It's also clear that it's a very complicated, expensive idea that isn't quite ready yet. So the idea is that Cavo uses visual analytics to know what's going on in the video stream and, quote, to figure out what to do next based on what it sees. Universal remotes are pretty stone simple. Even the complicated ones like a Harmony. Like, I love Harmony remotes. You know, I hit a button, and the screen comes down, the Blu-ray player comes on, the lights
are set up.
Once they're set up, right?
Yes.
And it's a lot of, like, I pick these things, but it's a very simple chain of events.
And it generally works very well.
Yeah. And you know, the idea here is that, you know, you can tell it that you want to watch a show, and it's going to do all the behind-the-scenes work. Like, you know, I want to watch
anything, really.
I'm thinking of a particular show with Timothy Oliphant that I can't think of. Justified.
Okay.
You know, and it's gonna know enough to be like, oh, he's got Justified, you know, in iTunes, or Justified is available on Hulu, or Justified is available on Netflix. And it's crazy, right? Because, you know, you get a Cavo, you set up a Cavo account, you enter in everything, all of your services, and then you literally have 8 HDMI inputs on this.
And it actually does some auto-detection of the devices you connect.
Yeah.
So that goes a ways beyond what Harmony does, in the sense where if you know the model numbers of everything you're dealing with, mm-hmm. setting up a Harmony is pretty straightforward.
Right.
But it's a matter of, what specific model of TV do I have, actually? And those kind of specific details that might be a little too much for some people. And this does a good job with that, but it did have one main downside.
Well, before you get into the downside, what's kind of crazy, right, is it's got an IR blaster, it does CEC.
Good.
And it determines which one will do the best job of controlling, like, you know, HDMI CEC or the IR blaster or something else.
CEC gets in my way sometimes. I can't wait for the next gen of HDMI, HDMI 2.1,
right,
where hopefully this stuff will work a little bit better, especially with ARC audio support and things like that. So, anyway.
So, you know, other than that, it's expensive. What's the drawback on this? Because this is a $400 super sophisticated device to make it easier for you to, you know, visually with a remote or verbally with your mouth, which I guess is how verbal things happen. What's the drawback?
Not much, really, other than the fact that its support, even though it has HDMI 2.0, mm-hmm, doesn't have any letter after that. In addition to HDCP 2.2, it will support your 4K devices, but it will not support HDR signaling or Dolby Atmos.
Mm-hmm.
And in a device that expensive in this day and age, you're losing out on some of your premium features of a TV by going through this device if you're using, say, external devices, mm-hmm, like, say, the latest game consoles or any of the Ultra HD over-the-top boxes, mm-hmm, like my Chromecast Ultra or the Roku Ultra or, geez, even Apple TV's new 4K box.
Right.
If you're looking to use an external device that supports HDR on an HDR TV, this is not the product for you.
Yeah.
And that's a kind of a big deal.
Which is unfortunate, right? Because, you know, they've got cool things like watch lists that know, you know, what you're watching on different services. You can set it up to open, you know, a Vudu on one piece of hardware and Amazon Prime on a different piece of hardware. You know, the watch lists literally track what you're watching and keep a clue. It's frustrating. You know, the other thing that Nile said is there's going to be, quote, these first 5,000 buyers are definitely going to live through some growing pains because, you know, this is incredibly complicated and incredibly sophisticated. And, you know, I think they released 5,000 units so they can do some late beta with a much larger amount of hardware that they can probably
you
set up.
You have to have actual users doing very odd things with your devices to make sure they're going to be solid.
Like, so William Gibson used to say, the street finds its own uses for things. And, you know, users find failure points that you never run into in quote normal unquote testing.
And I would compare this directly to something like the Logitech Harmony Elite,
mm-hmm,
which is a touchscreen remote, and it comes with the Harmony Hub.
Right.
And while it doesn't provide your centralized HDMI switching and live preview for HDMI ports, it's $250 for the Harmony Elite. And
so something that is not nearly as sophisticated is more than half the price.
True. And if you're already dealing with something like an AVR or you're simply using the ports on your TV as your HDMI switch, something like the Harmony Elite will get the job done, not interfere with your HDMI HDR doings, and it costs, you know, $150 less. So they really need to get version 2 out, I think, as quickly as possible, because apparently there won't even be a software update available to add HDR and Dolby Atmos support for the Kavo at this point. So
right.
It was impressive when we previewed it a couple of years ago. It is a solid device now, but I think if you're looking at the latest, if you're the home theater enthusiast who has the HDR devices connected to your HDR setup on an HDR TV, you're effectively removing HDR compatibility by adding this device in, and that's kind of a no-go for me, at least.
So close.
So close.
Oh my goodness. I don't know. It's always exciting. Like, I'll be honest with you, you know, this is one of those products that when we saw it, I was like, that's really neat. It's never going to ship. And they're shipping.
No,
admittedly in small amounts, but this is an accomplishment.
No, I mean, style. It looks good. Like, the company was very acutely aware of making it simple to use. And I think they nailed everything except for a stupid chipset thing.
Mm-hmm.
Literally a chipset limitation.
Which is unfortunate.
Yeah. And you know what?
And also, I think it, you know, it's probably shipping, you know, a year later than they expected it to.
That's true, too. Because had it shipped within, say, 6 months of us first seeing it, it would have probably been on version 2 already. and we wouldn't be having this discussion right
or,
now.
Or, you know, version one, nobody would have cared that it didn't have HDR because somebody had HDR. We've been talking about HomePod a little bit, you know. The general consensus is that it sounds great, Siri needs help, and everybody wants sort of AirPlay 2 to show up so it'll do stereo or multi-room.
There we go.
There's a really interesting, a really thoughtful spiel that David Pogue wrote, I want to say for Yahoo. And it was interesting for me because it looks at how people listen, right? He created blind testing, like, you know, ABCD testing with a bunch of different devices. And like a Sonos One, a Google Home Max, the HomePod, and the Amazon Echo Plus. And I'll give you a hint. Nobody really likes the way, you know, the Amazon Echo sounds. But the Amazon Echo has the smallest, you know, it's the
significantly
cheapest.
Significantly less, yes.
Yeah, and they spent the least amount of time working on it. The audio is the least important part of the Amazon Echo, and they cut corners to make money, which is perfectly normal. But what was funny is when he had some tests, he did some ABCD testing with his family, and he worked really hard to kind of, especially when he got a bunch of people in, like one of them's a professional violinist and the other one's, you know, a professional audio engineer and
people who use their ears quite a bit.
Well, he expected everybody was going to pick the HomePod, and it's not what happened. Two people thought the Google Home Max was the best. Three thought the Sonos One was the best. And nobody ranked the HomePod the best.
Crazy.
Yeah. Professional musician found the Sonos to be a little too emphatic on the highs. You know, the low end on the HomePod won one of the four test songs. It was interesting to see, how different people reacted, because he basically had everybody talk about what they liked, and he quotes it in there. And to point out that, you know, different people listen differently. You know, and he also points out that Apple, when they did this initial setup, this test for everybody, you know, two of the devices were wired. One was over Wi-Fi, and one was running over Bluetooth, which I don't really consider a particularly even playing field.
Although
the Wi-Fi versus Ethernet is probably not going to impact things very much.
But
doing one over Bluetooth is
a little odd.
But if
you're doing an audio conversion into Bluetooth for certain sources, that could add some degradation of audio quality.
You know, and it's also, you know, pointing out that a lot of people are finding the bass to be a bit much on the HomePod. And you can't tune it. You know, it does its thing, and then you're stuck with whatever it does. So
for me, it's just being locked. I mean, I'm not a hardcore Apple user. So,
right.
And that thing is so Apple-centric in terms of the sources of audio you can currently use with it.
Yeah.
And
well, several people have reminded
integration.
Have told me that you can, you know, AirPlay to it.
Totally. I would expect that.
But yeah, it's, I'm sure we've probably talked more about the HomePod than anybody wants us to, but it was interesting to look at somebody trying to do their best to create a super professional, unbiased, blind, you know, let's avoid bias conception and let's create an equal playing field. And the reactions from everything from a couple of teenagers to a couple of pros, you know, listening to these.
So. I appreciate Mr. Pogue just setting up a relatively blind ABC test and just comparing these different devices with different people.
If you get a HomePod,
yes.
Don't put it on an oiled wood surface.
Oh, okay. Is that bad? Oh, wait. No. You're talking about the white rings?
The white rings.
Oh, Lord. If you have really nice furniture, yeah, you may want to put it on a little pad or something.
Put a doily down.
A doily, yes.
Robert, go to your doily drawer. Get me a doily.
Oh, my goodness. That's
what's
crazy.
Going on with Vizio SmartCast showing up as a skill in Amazon Alexa?
Yeah. They sent out a press release a couple days ago mentioning that everyone with a 2016, 2017, I want to say it's the E series, the M series, and the P series, they're more premium TVs for the home environment, will receive an update that basically allows them to be controlled with your Echo, your Echo Dot, your Tap, Echo Show, and any other Alexa-enabled device. You can do things like adjust your volume, change the inputs, or turn the TV on and off, or in certain devices for playback, you could even control like fast forward, rewind, and pause. And that update will be coming via a free software update in the next couple weeks. And that's, I think, just a nice usability touch. A little added value down the road that you may not have been expecting with your Vizio TV. And that's just a cool thing. I did a calibration job on a Vizio M series last week. And I was surprised at how good the calibration controls work. And on those TVs, at least as far as the M and the P series go. I don't know if this applies to the E, but it includes that tablet remote.
Mm-hmm.
And I really do like the ability to drill down in a menu on a separate device and then get the control you want and have minimal on-screen interaction where it's not interrupting the measurement and testing of the display itself. And it makes it pretty easy to make adjustments to those individual settings much faster and easier than it is using any remote control I've used on any TV. So nice. I will say that. And it just adding this Alexa support is, I think, just one of those cool things where you may not think much of it. But if you already have one of these devices,
mm-hmm.
It's very convenient just to walk into the room and say, turn on the TV. And it just does it. And turn to this channel, hopefully, and things like that.
Make me a sandwich.
Or at the end of the evening or whenever you're about to roll out, rather than try to find the remote, turn off the TV.
Right.
And it's like, boom, done. So good
for
Vizio for
that.
Adding a little free update coming soon.
And you're a little biffed at Consumer Reports.
I was.
Well, frustrated, maybe.
It was more about, I think, the writing of the article. They highlight a potential security issue, no, an actual security issue,
right,
that they uncovered working with a third party of certain TVs and mm-hmm. certain connected devices that would allow someone to take remote control of that device.
So it was a very link-baity title, right?
It certainly was.
You know.
And they didn't put the details of exactly what was wrong until like 3/4 of the way through a very long mm-hmm. article.
Well,
that covered many other topics, but...
You know, the title is Samsung Roku Smart TVs Vulnerable to Hacking, Consumer Reports Finds.
Technically true. It is not a new issue, but this article did highlight it. And what it would require is you being on your same local
right.
network as your TV. In the case of the Roku devices in particular, this would include your connected devices as well as Roku-enabled TVs, like our wonderful TCL P-Series 607
right.
and other TVs like that.
So they were looking at televisions. There was part of they were trying to figure out what kind of data collection was being done by televisions.
Well, there's a lot of that going on.
Yeah, there's a tremendous. That's a wonderful source of revenue.
You should just assume that if you agree to everything on a smart TV, it is pretty much
telling
recording.
The mothership.
That's where they make money.
Yeah.
And collecting what you're watching or aggregating that data is worth it for them. And they make money doing that. And some services obviously are tracking what you do, like when you use Netflix. It's going to keep track of what you watch because they're streaming the content to
right.
you, and they're going to provide recommendations and other things like that. This, on the other hand, is that they found that with the remote control app
mm-hmm.
that is available with these devices, if a person is using their notebook, their phone, or a computer on that same local network as the TV, and that feature is enabled, if they're tricked into clicking a link, they will then enable the malware author to then literally use the remote control features on their TV. They don't believe anything. No data is being stolen. No hacking of the device itself. It's just suddenly, though, that malicious individual could be
malicious
turning the channel on you and providing a very surreal viewing environment.
So Rob
that
comes
you may not
over
be aware
to my house, and I put him on the primary network, not the isolated guest network, because Rob's family. And curling's on, and I'm really excited. And then Rob changes the channels.
Yes.
Or turns up the volume.
Yes.
Or plays naughty television.
I'm telling you. If you're not into clicking malicious links or oddball links that could possibly do things like
right.
that, this is not a problem for you. And I will say, I do give Consumer Reports credit. They are going to be integrating testing of this kind in terms of security on these, in this case, televisions,
right.
Into their review process. So I like that. I just felt that they really should have gotten to the main point in the first paragraph of that article and not maybe scroll through two, three pages.
They're also saying it could happen from thousands of miles away.
Oh, no, it's true. Once you click that link,
mm-hmm.
whoever crafted it, and if they've directed it toward them to take remote control of your TV, they can. And this can be disabled if you're not using that remote control feature on a mobile device mm-hmm. or on your computer to control your TV. You can simply turn that off within
right.
the menu system of a Roku device. Samsung actually required that you had previously used the remote control app prior to clicking on that malicious link.
Yeah.
So it was a little, there was one extra step there that kept them at bay. And thankfully, Consumer Reports actually reported this to both companies. They're looking into it. I wouldn't say this is like a big red flag for anybody, really,
mm-hmm.
but the potential is there. It's something to be aware of. But at the same point, I don't see this affecting me or any device right. I use. But
I do like that they actually have now an entire web page dedicated how to turn off smart TV snooping features.
Good luck with that.
Well, you know, but they were saying, like, in some cases it was like four menus deep. So they've got one for LG, for Samsung, for Sony, you know, for TCL Roku TVs, Vizio TVs.
I used to get a giggle when I set up Samsung TVs to where it literally would present you with like a 140-page document.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, are you going to read through all of this on your TV screen before you click, yes, I accept everything. Please just make this work. And no, nobody's going to do that. I tried. I at least looked through. I didn't look.
Somewhere around 25 pages.
I scrolled 140 pages, but I didn't, do it. So,
got a message from Tim on Facebook, facebook.com/AVXL. And by the way, if you have a question for us, if you got a tip, if there's a show you love, send us an email, ask@techthing.com. I'm going to ask everybody.
What show?
Well, did I say techthing.com? ask@AVXL.com. It has been a long week. I've packed up so many amplifiers and speakers and computers this week.
The great migration.
Send us an email. Better you send an email to ask@AVXL.com.
Yes, there
and
you
I'm going to invite everybody listening to this episode. I'm curious what your favorite movie is and what's your favorite movie to demonstrate your home theater.
Yep.
And it's okay if they're the same movie, but I suspect in many cases they will not be the same movie.
Also, if your question or comment is going to take up more than one or two tweets, put it in an email.
Yeah. We promise to keep your email private.
Oh, totally. We're not selling you down the road.
Who would we sell you to?
No. But Tim did send us a pretty cool response. Oh, yeah. On Facebook.
Said, hey, guys, facebook.com/AVXL, tweet @AVXL, email ask@AVXL. So Tim messaged us on facebook.com/AVXL. He says, hey, guys, love the podcast. Thank you. Catching up with some old episodes and listening to episode 65 last night. You discuss phase and polarity, which you mostly reference as phase. However, what you are really talking about is polarity. Phase is time-related, and I don't think any modern AV pre-processor can do this. What you are really doing with speaker cabling is switching the polarity. Unfortunately, this mix-up is quite rampant today, even with many manufacturers. And he sent us links to a couple of good articles, Just Mastering's Polarity, Phase, What's the Difference? And Total Pro Audio's Phase or Polarity.
Yep.
Polarity.
I brought this up when I was dealing with an error I received during a speaker setup for a client. And one of the speakers, and I want to say it actually listed as a phase error
right.
from the AVR, when technically it would be a polarity error because it was simply switching the plus and the minus on the connection to the speaker itself. Ended
right.
up, quote-unquote, correcting it.
Right.
And yes, when you are switching the positive and the negative straight up, that is polarity.
Mm-hmm.
And phase, yeah, it is time, time-based. So it is more accurate to say
right.
it is polarity, and that's something I will make a conscious effort to do.
Right.
I would also say, though, I believe in a sense you could think of a phase adjustment on a at least the modern AVRs, perhaps related to the timing signals.
Well, that's
maybe
that's an let's hold off on that for a second.
I'm
right?
not going to go down that route.
Because AVRs, most of the tuning software on modern AVRs, and a lot of what makes the audio quality in terms of the home theater surround sound experience on AVRs different, is the quality of the software it uses to set up your speakers for the room, which is essentially adjusting levels and possibly adjusting timing so that for some bizarre reason, you know, your right speaker is 40 feet farther away from the central listening position than your left speaker. It can compensate for that, which is still not technically phase, but The article, like the Just Mastering article on phase and polarity, is pretty interesting because they show you images of, you know, things being out of phase and negative polarity. And so when polarity is wrong, right, when you've got your left speaker, the positive is connected to the positive and the negative is connected to the negative. And
that's
the right
the correct
speaker,
way.
Yeah. And the right speaker, you invert that and you connect the negative from the amplifier to the positive and the positive to the negative. you're not changing the phase. You are positioning the waveform as either right side up or upside down.
Totally.
Right? So if you think of audio, you know, someone plucks a string and there's this waveform, this up and down and up and down and up and down. That's the audio. And you have if the left speaker and the right speaker have inverse polarity, you are positioning one of the waveforms opposite of the other. They are still in the same position in time. So,
but that will mess with your audio quality when that happens.
Yeah,
and if all of the speakers are simply wired the same way, it really doesn't matter which way they're connected.
As long as they're all wired the same way.
Is the, I forget what they call it, the absolute polarity or something to that effect. But if the polarity on everything is the same, then you're good to go. It doesn't matter if you backward connected all of the wires.
Yeah.
As long as they're all the same.
The ever so excellent audiocheck.net, which we talk about a lot,
because
they have all these amazing files for listening to audio.
And they call it their polarity test.
Yeah, their polarity check. It's funny, they do call it the polarity sound test, but it's the stereo polarity and then in parentheses phase sound test, because so many people think of it as the speakers being out of phase.
That's good for SEO.
Yeah, it is good for SEO. But if you run their test, right, it'll help you determine if your speakers are, you know, if you inverse the polarity on your stereo speakers. And they say, quote, at the listening position, right in between the speakers, the displaced air from one will be canceled out by the other. This effect, stronger at lower frequencies, will result in a loss of bass. It also drastically distorts the stereo imaging. So if you walk up to somebody's speakers and there's no bass and it seems weird, the image of the stereo audio seems weird, go look behind the speakers and see if, you know, if they are wired with the same polarity. Yeah.
Good point, though.
So,
and yes, there's a big technical difference, and they are not the same in terms of phase and polarity.
Oh, my goodness. In any case, we thank Tim for taking the time to message us and set us straight. And we will endeavor not to mix up polarity and phase in future episodes of AVXL.
Heck no.
Or in our personal lives.
See why the Odyssey folks are less concerned about phase errors, because it's simply just a timing error that, you know, they tend to say just ignore them.
Yeah, well, there are speaker designers right now that are cringing because they've spent their entire adult lives trying to keep audio in phase. But let us not go down that particular rat hole. Because John emailed ask@avxl.com. And while I'm mentioning ask@avxl.com, I'm going to mention patreon.com/avxl, which is the crowdfunding site. We ask you to become a patron. That's like subscribing to the show that pays the bills around here and gives us a little pocket change to work on projects with and keep buying hardware and stuff to test and feed ourselves and make sure my children have health insurance and all that stuff. So if you can spare a couple bucks a month, do us a favor, head over to patreon.com/AVXL. And John writes, hey, Patrick and Robert, love the work y'all do and been a follower since the DLTV days, old school. Thanks for following us, John. He says, I'm starting to do some early research towards updating my aging, going on 6+ years home theater setup. I want to start off with the AVR. While the CES dust settles around TVs. My goal is to have a system that is fully 4K HDR WCG ready that can be expected to have Atmos later down the line. Hopefully this will cover me for another 6+ years. And then below, he has the spec sheets for his current Yamaha system that was purchased as an all-in-one bundle. Given the age of the pieces and my goal, are any of them worth carrying forward into a new system? Or should I just start from scratch and go from there? I know the receiver will have to go at least, so any recommendations there would be great too. And he's got basically a Yamaha RX-V471, a set of small satellite speakers, the Yamaha NS-AP6505, and a subwoofer, the Yamaha YST-SW012. Looking forward to hearing what y'all have to say and keep on doing great work. And thank you for emailing us, John. I love this question because I love making hardware last as long as possible because, you know, partially I'm cheap and partially I know that I will just keep buying things if I don't.
Once you get past that first 30 days, those things generally last a long time.
Yeah. And, you know,
if they're well cared for.
Yeah. And if you pick well, if you get a good set of speakers, you know, they will last you approximately forever these days because the speaker surrounds don't disintegrate. And if you don't blow out the tweeters, they're going to last a long time.
So I'm assuming John does not have a new TV yet.
He does not have a new TV yet.
He's not dealing with the 4K high dynamic range, wide color gamut display systems.
Well, what made me laugh is if he did not need to upgrade to 4K at Atmos, I would have been like, hold on to the receiver for as long as you can stand
it. There's no reason to upgrade any of it.
However, he's going to have to upgrade that receiver to get 4K and Atmos.
And that's widely available now, and it works really well. And and if you're really looking forward, there are some premium AVRs out there, which I don't think you're in the market for, but they're already claiming they will be adding support for HDMI 2.1 down the road, which will add some even newer features for TVs that maybe for next year.
And this is one
of
those...
If you're really looking to future-proof it.
Well, okay, so in this one, I would say, you know, like, Wirecutter's got a great pick, Denon's AVR S730H, which is like 7.2. It's got their HEOS wireless technology, but mostly, though, it's got good setup, you know, good quality audio.
You'll be able to connect any 4K device to that. HDR support
is not going
to
be a problem.
Dolby Atmos.
Two-channel is fine.
Dolby Vision. All of it. It's there.
You know, I would buy that last because that's going to be about $500. And you never know, you know, $480 plus tax or whatever.
That might have been the first thing I would have went for.
Well, it's,
but it's not needed yet.
It's not needed yet. Because
and I think in the short term, his I think his best option just for personal enjoyment might be just speaker upgrades.
Yeah. And that's where I thought, like, I'd start by upgrading the speakers and the subwoofer and then the receiver. And like I said, if he didn't need 4K and Atmos, I'd just run the AVR into the ground.
Totally.
But he's going to want 4K and Atmos as soon as he gets the new 4K HDR television. Now, there's kind of two things when you're looking at speakers and subwoofers. Like, what's your budget look like? What kind of speakers can you fit in your space? Do you want to keep them small? Can you fit bookshelf speakers on stands?
Could you put speakers in the ceiling?
Yeah. Well, one of the things, you know, one of the things John said is that he wants to keep fairly small speakers because he's in an apartment and doesn't have a huge amount of space.
Okay. So you're probably not drilling into the ceiling.
No.
To mount in ceiling speakers, at least.
Yeah. The and that was, that's...
But there's no reason you can't attach speakers to the wall then.
No.
So...
Well, he's got a couple of stands he uses for the rear speakers right now. These are like little kind of pod-like speakers that are designed to be super easy to fit
I am
into
less
your
inclined
house.
To recommend the upfiring designs for Dolby Atmos support, adding the speakers that shoot the sound up and off the ceiling. But if that's the only option you have, then it will add some of those effects.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I would just be going for just solid 5.1 or 7.1 surround sound. That's going to provide a very compelling listening experience. And you could probably do a lot of that with your current hardware. And that's, again, I kind of agree with the start with the speaker setup first and go from there.
I wish I had more time. Like, you know, I was going to say like ELAC debuts would be awesome. And maybe you could use those for the front three channels and something smaller for the rear channels. But those are a fantastic set of speakers for the money. And they have a matching subwoofer, although if you had the budget, I'd say get something from Shoe or an RSL Speedwoofer. But, you know, just for fun, I'd say take a look at the ELAC debuts and figure out if you can actually fit those in your space. And if you can't, I would have to look around. Like, there's not a lot of, you know... There are some pretty interesting small speaker, like the Orbs come to mind that we reviewed 1,000 years ago, which are very aesthetically pleasing and very, very small. But I'm still kind of searching for a favorite small home theater speaker.
Well, it's not the tiniest of speakers I've used, but the Andrew Jones Design Pioneer 5.1 set.
I would get the ELAC debuts before I'd buy them at this point. Those
excellent.
Are nice.
No, but
and they're an amazing set of speakers for
the
money.
That's a pretty good setup. But that might not be very different from what you're currently rolling with, especially if it's set up right, where the speakers are aimed properly and you ran through the setup and made sure your phase and polarity and timing are all in spec. But I wouldn't be afraid of any of the new AVRs, even in the lower price tiers.
Yeah.
For the most value-oriented ones, they all seem to be doing proper pass-through when needed. They support 4K, HDR, and Atmos seems to almost be a checkbox feature nowadays.
Yeah.
So.
Paradigm's got the Cinema 100 5.1 home theater system. I don't know how you would integrate Atmos into that. And that's one of the advantages of the debuts because they have matching Atmos upfiring speakers that go with them. Paradigm, if you need a very compact, small speaker, Paradigm, you know, if you're going to spend 10 grand, man, Paradigm's Persona is a pretty ninja speaker and
they're
gorgeous for a pair of stereo speakers, like reference stereo speakers. But for $700 with Paradigm Cinema 100, it's a 5.1 system and a subwoofer. you know, you might want to upgrade the subwoofer in the future, but I'm not quite sure how you would integrate Atmos into that. And like I said, it's one of the nice things about the debuts is they make it fairly easy to, you know, to basically plop two up-firing Atmos speakers on top of the left and right front channel on that one. Man, I'm trying to think of some small
great speakers.
Yeah, you know, I've had a set of Kef's T305s for a really long time.
I would be...
And those are flat and designed to... You don't have to... Those are flat and designed to be mounted on the wall, not in the wall. You know, but they're like 2.5 feet long and like 3 or 4 inches wide.
I prefer front tower speakers if I can have them.
Yes.
For the left and right channels. And then a decent size center channel as well. Something matched to those, at least those three. And then when it comes to the surrounds, that's where I'd be willing to sacrifice some size if it's more convenient for the setup.
So I think... If I'm listening to us, is I'm like looking at like the ELAC Unify, you know, tower speakers and thinking about stuff from Tekton and other places. Figure out, you know, John's budget's about $1,500 for the speakers. If I have that, if I read the email correctly, and start, I would start by figuring out if you can fit bookshelves or tower speakers for your front, you know, your center left and right channel up front, or your left and right with a matching center up front. If you can't, think about those paradigms. We're going to call out to the audience. Do you have a set of favorite small home theater speakers that you particularly enjoy? Email us, ask@avxl.com. And we'll nose around and see if there's any other options out there. But like I said, like, you know, the Kef T305s are pretty fantastic, you know, and they are engineered to be mounted against a wall.
Oh, cool.
You know, they have special stands you can buy that actually attenuate the signal to make up for not having the wall behind the speaker. You know, they stick out about 1/2 inch. I understand that you can't put in-wall speakers because it's a rental. You know, in terms of bang for the buck, ELAC's debuts and Univisor is pretty spectacular if you can fit those speakers
you ain't
in your space.
Wrong with that, so.
And you know, we'll think of some other ones. And those Paradigm Cinema 100 CTs have there's a lot of love for those out there. We just need to figure out how to get you Atmos support on them. Maybe you could buy another two of them and mount them on the ceiling. That'll surely ramp up
Velcro those suckers
the spouse acceptance factor.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness! You finally got your Roku Ultra set up.
Yeah. That thing is fantastic. I didn't look at any instructions. I literally just took it out of the box and hooked it up, and it does a beautiful guided setup, including a really clever automated remote control setup to take over power and volume and things like that for the display device you're using. And it worked fantastic. And I have to say, I think the virtual fish tank is my favorite screensaver on that thing. Kind of old school, and I hope they do upgrade that eventually to 4K HDR. That would, whoever does that first, pristine virtual fish tank for a TV in 4K HDR, I think is going to be the winner. So, but anyway, that thing works fantastic. I will say, the first night I set it up, it overheated on me.
Oh, no.
And it was giving me crazy warnings, but it hasn't done that since. And I think it had something to do with where I had placed it. So I just simply moved it a little bit, and it seemed to have... It hasn't warmed up again like that. So I don't know if it was something to do with the first time setup when it was doing the firmware updates and everything. But so far, it's just a fantastic experience. Snappy. Perfect for watching the Olympic series through the NBC Sports app. But
oh my goodness.
In addition to every other streaming source I use, including Amazon's video, Netflix, of course, MLB, that's coming up soon for Major League Baseball. And I have no complaints whatsoever. I haven't even gotten into local playback of files stored on my local storage. In addition to, it also has a SD card reader built into it that I'm not even sure what that's for, but I will plug an SD card into it and find out and see if there's other cool things to be done with that. And I am enjoying it. And speaking of MLB TV, they are rolling out some minor updates for 2018. The ones that caught my eye is, and they seem to do this more frequently than not, but effectively they have redone the media player, the all-new high-definition media player will be new for the 2018 version of MLB TV. Also, a catch-up feature for Apple TV, the fourth generation and above. You can watch the key plays you missed in a fraction of the time, I'm just quoting, and then join the game live. So if you've come into the game an hour late, it will get you caught right up without really missing any of the key moments. And, quote, other new features will be added throughout the season. And that's pretty cool. In addition to that, it provides an archive if you subscribe to the service for every game. Some of my favorite features are related to the audio side of things, where I can select, say, instead of the announcers, I can select just stadium sound or the ambient park sound. And I really appreciate that. Also, some of the teams, I simply prefer the radio guys with the television broadcast. And this allows you to do things like that. And if you're a baseball fan, this was arguably one of the first and best ways of streaming that content in a reasonable quality. And it's simply gotten better over time. And that core software is being used now on other platforms and other sports and other things. So it's a good thing. And if you're a baseball fan or you know someone who is, that'd be a one sweet gift to keep them connected. Be they on the road with their mobile device or, like I am, also on the road, but also at home with a portable device. Or like a, nice. You know, like my Roku Ultra. Or any of my game consoles. They also support it. PlayStation's always been one of my favorite game consoles for the MLB software. And I'm really hoping some of those key features that seem to only exist on the game console side of things, as far as the MLB software went, will make their way over to some of the other OTT devices I have. So
many devices.
Yeah. Baseball's coming.
Oh, man.
And there are no blackouts on the preseason games. This will require me to probably spend a little money to enable watching my local teams, unfortunately, which is, I ain't going to get into it. The blackout stuff needs to just go away. That's just, it's beyond ridiculous.
Eh, well.
There is a really funny map, though, of how the blackouts work for Major League Baseball across the United States. Mm-hmm. And at first glance of this map, it looks like the folks in Hawaii have it the worst in terms of they are subject to the blackouts of all teams on the western United States, pretty much, going from Washington on down to San Diego. So it's like, there's probably like six teams involved there where you're subject to local blackouts just because of where you live. And that's my one complaint about the service. If you are no longer living in your hometown where your favorite team exists, it's perfect because then you'll see that team play every game in glorious HD-like quality. Up to 60 frames a second, too. So I found the quality, and I am looking forward to checking out the new player just to see how see if they can improve upon last year's image quality at all.
You were pretty excited about that last year.
You're pretty
excited about that every year. Like, they just keep improving it, which is...
It just works.
Novel and delightful.
The I got to say, outside of watching the Olympics with my kids and having that sort of experience of watching... For example, Shaun White just crush it.
Oh, that was great.
Oh, way to come back.
Men's and women's snowboarding. Just fantastic.
Oh, my goodness.
The double 180s. Or double 1080s, excuse me.
If you've never been in an Olympic halfpipe, it's terrifying. I got to stand in one that was built to the Olympic specs.
I was looking at the machine that Stratton creates once. The halfpipe. That's a neat snowblower.
they're a little terrifying to watch working. But you know, the thing that really stuck with me this week was watching comedians in cars getting coffee, which is not driving with comedians in cars. It's comedians in cars getting coffee. Watching, you know, Seinfeld talk to people about comedy and their careers.
All right.
I actually really enjoyed that. Go watch cool stuff. And do us a favor, email ask@avxl.com with your favorite movie and your favorite movie for demonstrating how awesome your home theater is.
Yes, that's a good one.
You know, because we have our lists, but we're curious what yours looks like. If you'd like to support us, and we'd appreciate that, patreon.com/AVXL is a place where you can subscribe. We pool together all of you, donating a little bit each month, and makes it possible for us to keep doing the show. And I'm going to figure out how we can do Atmos for the CT100 speakers. You're going to take a look at that Channelmaster Smart Tenna.
Yes.
And there will be ponies.
And I have some additional testing for the new 8 series OLEDs coming out from LG later this month. So
nice.
I'll be getting more hands-on time with an even more recent updated model. So
the updates just keep coming.
It's already impressive. I think it is just going to be a fantastic solid product, much like the 7 series was for 2017. 2018, it's looking good too. And we're getting closer and closer to the launch of Samsung's. At least those demos were some of the most amazing LCD technology I've ever seen, and could truly, if those demos were accurate, give OLED a run for the money this year.
And that's exciting.
That is, in addition to the many other manufacturers who are now stepping up with superb brightness output, good off-axis viewing, and just the nature of HDR with its impressive color. And Don't even get me started, though, on 4K coverage for the Olympics. It is non-freaking-existent unless you subscribe with hardware boxes from satellite or cable providers. And that's the only way to do it this year. And that to me, is just a big bummer that there's no solid streaming option. However, I do plan to fire up my VPN and pretend I'm in Europe or Canada and check out their coverage online and see if they're offering anything in 4K. If they are, I will be even more angry at NBC and their Olympic app. I mean, NBC's got by far the coolest app.
Yeah.
For looking at the coverage and finding the exact events you want to watch.
If you have a cable subscription, yeah, it can actually,
or
you
the
know,
OTT
validate
stuff,
the app,
which and is good to know. Work. So if you need that, if you don't want the full cable box experience just to receive some Olympic coverage, you can do a month on one of these OTT services like PlayStation View or Sling TV or any of the others, or I'm sure YouTube TV as well, since they seem to advertise on every other page. Watch the Olympics on YouTube TV. So, although they just rose their prices up to $40 a month, so
$35 a month.
Yeah, I think something is.
What's included for $35 a month on YouTube TV? You know, what I'm really curious about with YouTube TV is if it's as badly compressed as regular YouTube is. Because YouTube, they do a lot of terrible things in the compression.
I was
of
watching
video.
Some 4K HDR YouTube.
ABC, CBS, Fox, NBC, AMC, BBC America, BBC World News, Bravo, BTN, Cartoon Network, CNBC Sports. NBC Sports, Sports Network, CNN, Comet, the CW, Disney XD.
See now, if just goes on YouTube TV was offering a 4K HDR stream of the Olympics, I would have been on that yesterday.
Right.
So, anyway.
Well, there's no DVR storage limits.
Yes. Everything's recorded all the time. You just pick and choose what you want to watch.
Oh, my goodness. With that, ladies and gentlemen, we want to thank you, as always, for listening to the show. Older episodes can be found at avxl.com. You've got links to so you can subscribe in your favorite podcatcher or RSS feed or iTunes or wherever you want to listen, and we appreciate that.
Yes,
Ask
we
at
do.
AVXL. Let me get that show name right. Ask at AVXL is the place to email us. You can tweet at Patrick Norton, at Robert Heron, at AVXL. Or, you know, post something on Facebook.com/AVXL. We want to be accessible because we want to hear your questions. What are you excited about? What are you looking forward to? What do you need reviews of? What problems are you having? One of the things I'm doing right now is I've rebuilt the Rip Monster 3000 because I'm literally in the process of once again ripping 600 or 800 CDs.
Yikes.
Well,
again?
You know, it's a lifestyle choice, apparently.
I hear you. As long as you don't have to re-rip stuff.
Oh, I'm re-ripping.
I did it all to flak, and I don't feel a need to go beyond that as long as I have the software tools that allow me to easily convert that
right.
into like an MP3 or an OGG file if I want.
Let's just say there were some storage issues.
I have no problems with at the moment. Although I did manage to fill up a 50-plus terabyte system with 1080p video. But that's a separate project.
That's a separate project.
It requires
that's a professional project.
Careful management on that.
But. Yeah, despite having like, you know, Backblaze 18 terabytes on tap with an 8-bay NAS and several other things.
NAS is the key.
You know, I think I literally forgot to migrate something. You know what? We'll talk about ripping CDs next
I'm ready
week.
To upgrade my NAS.
You're always ready to upgrade your NAS.
I most certainly am.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening. I'm Patrick Norton.
Hey, I am Robert Heron.
We'll catch you on AVXL next week.